You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy, and you're listening to my podcast, Vox and Hops, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians and we talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. This coming Tuesday, on December 3rd, the Devastation on the Nation tour is unveiling its full tour dates. I am so stoked and so proud to be one of the official sponsors of this year's Devastation on the Nation. Back in 2017, Cryptopsy headlined Devastation on the Nation tour, where we played None So Vile in its entirety. It was an absolutely great time, and I'm so stoked to be a part of this year's lineup. It's absolutely incredible. Devastation on the Nation 2020 features Rotting Christ, Borknagar, Wolfheart, Abigail Williams, and Imperial Triumphant. That's such a sick lineup. So lucky to have this happening in North America. This is a tour that you do not want to miss, so make sure to keep your eyes peeled on December 3rd to see if this tour is coming to your town or a town near you. And if it doesn't come to your town, don't bitch. Get in your car and drive to that closest city and come see the tour. Sometimes when we're on tour, we drive 10 plus hours a night to come and play for you, so you can return the favor and come take a trip to come see us. Until December 4th, I have a Black Friday sale going on at the Vox and Hops Big Cartel page. The best way to support the podcast is to go through the Vox and Hops Big Cartel page. I've reduced the prices of the Cuff Knit Vox and Hops beanie, as well as the 9-ounce Vox and Hops branded glassware. If you place your orders in before next week, you will get them before the holidays. So these items make excellent gifts for your craft beer and metal-loving friends. The link to the Vox and Hops Big Cartel page is available in the description of this podcast and is on all the Vox and Hops social media pages. Today on the podcast, I am with Chris Bose, the vocalist of Ailstorm. Here it is, Vox and Hops, episode 90.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Today I'm with Chris Bose, the vocalist of Ailstorm. We are right outside of Metropolis, now MTELUS, and you're about to tear the place down.
We're gonna try our best to give the people of Montreal a big, silly, drunken, happy party, yeah.
Does it get tiring being that guy? The drunken party guy?
Yeah, the people come to the shows and they go, oh yeah, we're going to see Ailstorm. That's the drunken party pirate band. That means they're all going to be drunk and ready for a party. But, you know, we're still humans, you know. We get old. We're getting really old. So you get drunk one night a week and you're like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I need to sleep. But we're getting by.
It is something that happens when I'm on tour, is like, for these people coming to the shows, this is their big night out.
Yeah.
They're coming. They've saved up for it, hypothetically. They got their beer fund, and they're going to go out and have a good time. And they expect us to go with them. How far along do you play? How reserved do you have to keep yourself to keep the show going and being at the level that you expect it to be and to be happy as a human being?
Yeah, to quote M. Bison from the Street Fighter movies, for me, this is just Tuesday. That's one of my favorite lines. Anyway, but yeah, we try our best to, you know, we're fun people. At least I like to think we're fun people. You know, I think I'm all right. You know, I like a drink, but we also, you know, we like to play well. There's a fine line where you do too much of one and the other one becomes a bit compromised, so.
And the main reason that you are here, that we go on tour, is to play to people.
Yeah.
To perform.
I mean, I think, you know, back in the day when this band was young and we were all young and we had livers of steel and no one really cared too much about what we did. Oh, we'd get up there trashed and just play a bunch of songs and go, isn't drinking great? Woo! And then, to be honest, no one cared. And people liked it. But I think these days, I guess we're more professional, or at least more self-critical. And, you know, we gotta do the thing well. There's a lot of people watching, you know.
They're paid and want to experience.
They're paid, and some of them are paying awful amounts of money. So it's, you know, we don't want to ruin their night out. It's, even if that night out is a Tuesday.
Let's take me back to your youth, growing up in your house. What songs were playing? What did your parents listen to? What would be the soundtrack to your youth?
My parents were not the most into, you know, music, you know, popular music. I think they're there's some of these people that, you know, their music taste was in the 60s and the 70s, and then the 80s rolled around and they said, well, this music's not for me, you know, when everything became a bit disco, electronica, new wave. They said, nope, not for us. And then music just stopped being a thing. You know, we had a piano, and that's what got me started on this whole musical whirlwind is, you know, my dad would play the piano, and, you know, I learned the piano from a pretty young age. It was always there. I was never very good at it, you know. It's acceptable. I can play, but it's not incredible. And that's what started me on music. It was never like much in the way of rock music or anything. I remember my uncle had a Queen compilation tape, and every time we went to visit him, they'd put this tape on. I was like, wow, what the hell is this? This is just mind-blowing music. And, you know, it was the heaviest, coolest thing I'd ever heard. So,
what about your first gig? Do you remember your first gig before Alestorm, before that first time?
Watching a band.
Yeah.
It was, I went to see Rick Wakeman.
Yes.
From the band Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, exactly, yes. Doing a solo show in my hometown, Perth. I was in this big city hall theatre thing. We just sat, I think I was the only, me and my friends were the only people under 50 there. And, it was him doing solo, and they had this singer who I later found out was this guy, Damien Wilson, who sings in the band Threshold.
Okay, no.
It's a prog metal band. And he was the singer, and we were up on the balcony, and we were, like, again, say, the only young people there. And he sort of was on stage. It was just one of these very long Rick Wakeman instrumental songs. And he was just sort of standing there on stage, just, you know, thrusting a little bit. So then he saw us. We were the only people, like, you know, reacting, and he sort of going, oh my god, music. So then he came up on the side and just stood on this balcony in front of us and thrust it in our face. And that was very strange, being thrusted at by this guy,
by an older man.
But it was very, you know, it wasn't horrendous. It was just like, yeah, he was like, yeah, and we were like going, this is weird and cool, whatever. But then that was my first gig. But the real proper first metal gig was I was a massive fan of the band Balsa Goth from England, big crazy symphonic black metal orchestra nonsense keyboard band, and I went all the way down to England to Bloodstock Festival. It was the second Bloodstock Festival, back when it was a little small indoor thing. It's a bigger thing. It's one of the probably the bigger ones in England these days. But back then it was a small thing, in a pub. Well, pub, large venue, but, you know. And I saw Balsa Goth, and it was just the best thing. And I loved it, and it was just my favourite thing I'd ever seen at the time. I just couldn't believe how good it was. And that's what really got me on the whole, wow, you can play keyboards in an extreme metal band. You know,
that context didn't exist to you before.
No, but yeah, because, you know, back then, before that band, you know, my exposure to heavy music had been things like, you know, just the usual new metal-y nonsense and so on and so forth. And I didn't think there was such a thing as keyboards.
There was no place for it, yeah.
No, I didn't realize, wow, I've got a role in this world. So, you know, that's what got me
down this the rabbit hole, yeah. I was going to ask, because being from Perth, that's a small city, there was no big shows coming through. You always had to travel. So you had to be a huge fan of a band to buy those tickets, to get the lift organized, and to make your way there.
Yeah, even these days in Scotland, it's very much a forgotten about corner of the touring circuit. You know, it's, especially a lot of the big European bands, they think a UK tour means going to London and that's it.
Yeah, or hitting like Glasgow and
the ones that even make it to Glasgow, like when you're a kid, and Glasgow's like, especially in America and Canada, driving's a thing you do in your sleep, but in little old Scotland, people don't go far. Mm-hmm. 20 miles is a long way, and so just arranging transport to get to Glasgow and back is just beyond what I could have achieved, so which missed out on everything.
Fox and Hops is all about hanging out with metal people, drinking some craft beer. Today we're drinking Le Saint Buck's Malédiction. It is a milk stout with cacao and vanilla. It is one of their classic stouts. If you go to the pub, they serve it with a roasted marshmallow, which is
awesome. Does it just like sit on top of the
beer? Yeah, and then you eat it at the end.
Oh, which that sounds kind of fun, doesn't it?
It's delicious, actually. It's creamy, it's good, it's malty. Mm. Smells like chocolate.
I'm glad you picked a stout, because I am definitely not one for the bitter sort of, you know, hoppy sort of beers. I like a malty beer.
I figured. That being said, are you a craft beer enthusiast?
feeling honest for the most part, no, not really. When I drink beer at home, we tend to drink German Weiss beers. I find like a lot of American breweries, Canadian, you know, North American breweries, it's really where the whole craft beer thing is centered. They don't do Weiss beer right. It just doesn't taste the same as the German ones. It's always, everyone's trying to get too adventurous with like orange and cardamom and mad flavors. I just like a classic German Weiss beer.
The pure ingredients.
Yeah.
Having toured Europe and stuff, when you do fall into those pure beers, you can drink a whole bunch of them. You wake up the next day, you're a little bit thirsty, you have a bottle of water, and then, okay, I'm good to go.
Yeah.
Versus a night of craft beers.
You would not want to have, you would not want to have a night of drinking 10 of these or something.
No, that might be a mistake. They actually have a double Malédiction, which is double the percentage. I think it's up to, this is a 5%, so it's nice and smooth.
I think that's all it needs. I don't think beer needs to be strong, especially look at a lot of the English style ales, the ones they pump, and
yes, exactly,
they're like 3.5% alcohol, and it's great, you know.
But they're meant to be drank all day.
Oh yeah,
that's what they were invented for. Let's talk about your first experience with beer.
My first experience with beer.
Being from Scotland, I can imagine it was in a pub with your parents. Everyone that I've interviewed from the UK tends to have that story, which is very different from the American story where they had to go out and sneak and drink it. So let's see what yours is.
Well, interesting story. When I was younger, I was a little bit of a hardcore kid.
Really?
And as we all know, what goes with hardcore, everyone who thinks hardcore is great thinks that drinking's wrong. And even, you know, it's just the way it goes. It's it's part of the scene. Like, if you like metal, you grow your hair and wear black clothes. If you like hardcore, you don't drink. It's just one of these things. And I was really into like New York hardcore bands. Like, my favorite band was, again, this was like just before this whole metal thing kicked off for me. My favorite band was a band called Cause for Alarm. Good NY hardcore band. Anyway, and so that was me. And I sort of get stuck in my ways. And even when I sort of, you know, got into metal, I never quite got into drinking. I was like, I don't know about that. And I went off to college. Actually, just before I went to college, I started this band called, we were originally called Battleheart, before we were called Hailstorm. And, you know, we had this song, you know, from the very start, the lyrical themes were pirates and drinking. I didn't drink at all.
It was just an idea that you enjoyed.
Yeah, and I just liked writing the songs, you know. I was writing this song called I Want More Wenches and Mead, and I didn't know what mead tasted like. I just knew it was a thing. So I was writing these songs, and I started thinking, I should probably, I am in a band that sort of sings about this stuff. Maybe it's, you know, might want to see what it's all about. And it was in my second year at college, you know, university, whatever you want to call it. And I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'm going to have a drink.
Really?
Yeah. And I'd go to bars with my friends. I'd just have a Diet Coke, whatever, and they'd all drink. And I was like, hey, this guy was called Michael. I said, hey, Mike, I think I'm going to drink. He's like, really? So he bought me my first pint, and it was this beer called Worthington's Cream Flow. It's one of these English cream ales where it's kind of like industrial stout, I suppose, with this weird something about it makes it very velvety. And
They pump it on nitro, probably.
Yeah, it's very obnoxious head on it. And that was my first pint of beer. And I was like, great, cool, I'm going to drink beer now. And then I think went out the next night, and obviously, like I say, at this time, you know, I had a song called Wenches and Mead. I was like, right, you know what? I know there's a store in town, they sell mead. I'm going to buy a bottle of some fancy, nice mead. I bought this bottle of mead, and I drank about a quarter of it, and I was the most drunk man off a quarter of a bottle of what's basically wine, and I was just off it. And I was like, this is great. And of course, you know, wake up the next morning, you don't get a hangover if it's your first time drinking. You're like, oh my God, this is fantastic. Drinking's amazing. I'm going to just do this always. And then, you know, obviously,
as we grow and get older, the pain ensues.
Yeah.
What about your first times on stage? Were you a guy that just loved being on stage? In your house, were you always singing? You said you played piano. At what point did the singing come in with the piano?
Well, I was never a singer. I'm still not really a singer. And again, back when this band was still called Battleheart, I was just the keyboard player.
Really?
Keyboard player and songwriter. And it was like me and my friend Gavin, who was at the time the guitarist, we were sort of the guy. It was it was kind of like a studio project kind of thing. And it was just me and him. And we sort of assembled a vague sort of lineup. And we got this guy we knew who could sing. I used to play in percussion in an orchestra, and I knew this guy who liked a bit of rock and metal and could sing a bit. And so we recorded this instrumental demo and said, okay, you can do some vocals. And it was a song called Heavy Metal Pirates. And he came into the studio, and it was all a bit sort of clean, like very sort of like, yeah, we are heavy metal pirates.
It was like, it wasn't what you envisioned.
We were like, no, I think we should be a bit more kind of rough and tumble than that, a bit more piratey. So I said, you know, how about you sing it like this? And I took my went, we are heavy metal pirates, you know, like real fucking going extreme with his accent. And then we're like, oh, actually, yeah, that's it. Yeah, sorry, you're not in the band anymore. I'm a singer now. We were a little bit more gentle than that.
But you never sang before that? You never approached like vocal training?
Never. I still have not. I probably should, you know, just for the sake of protecting the old chords. But
do you do any steps leading up to stepping on stage? What is your warm-up technique? How do you stay healthy?
Well, the thing is, I sing very quietly.
Okay.
It's all in the microphone for me, really. So it is not a strain on my voice. I mean, obviously, when we go to the studio to record, I really belt it out. And I just deal with the pain. But on stage, I could do it forever.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You've hit your little niche. Yeah.
And people think, oh, how do I sing like you, Chris? It's like, really? You don't. It's not very good.
So it's like almost like a Fry sort of.
Yeah, kind of like that similar take, at least that similar approach, but a bit more sort of, you know, pirates. But there's certainly no immense power behind it. It's just there.
And how about, were you like a shy kid? What getting onto stage, was that like a big step for you, playing in front of people?
I think I've always been a bit like creatively outgoing. Like, I'm not usually an outgoing person normally, but I think I like to showcase my creative things. It's a good outlet for me to, you know, get out there. But I remember the first shows when we only did three shows as an unsigned band before.
Really?
It suddenly spiraled out of control.
Good for you. That's amazing.
It's
rare.
Things we didn't know that was amazing at the time. We just thought, okay, we've done three shows.
This is life. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we did nothing for a year. Like, all three shows were sold out. We thought, okay, whatever, that's what happens, right? That's what bands do. They play shows and they're sold out. Then a year later...
In Scotland,
in a pub in Dundee. Like 100 people, and everyone was dressed as pirates. So we thought, okay,
that's amazing.
Whatever. And then a year later, we were like, remember those songs we wrote? We should probably do something with those. So we sent them off to... at the time, we thought, oh, hey, who's this cool record label? Oh, they're called Napalm Records. They've got a... Our favorite bands at the time were bands like Korpiklaani, like folk metal bands, and Tear and things. They had a lot of the folk metal scene on their roster. So, let's just send them our demo. We had three songs on MySpace, and we sent them this link saying, hey guys, here's our MySpace. Are you interested? Got a reply within 24 hours saying, yes, here's a contract. We're like, okay. I guess that's what happens in the music industry. They just send you contracts, and so we it took us a long time to realize that, you know, we'd sort of stumbled
the
on
jackpot.
Yeah, we didn't know. We just thought that's what it went. You know?
Compared to all these other bands,
yeah,
just strum it out for years.
And then our next show was one of the conditions of signing was we changed our name and we said, "How about Ailstorm?" They said, "Okay."
So perfect.
Well, they at first did not think it was perfect. They wanted to give us the really stupid name.
More piratey, probably.
Well, yeah, they wanted something in Scots Gaelic. And we're like, really? It's unpronounceable. How are we going to cause any waves anywhere in the world if no one can say our name?
Mm-hmm. No, by the way, it's pronounced like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Every interview,
hey, here we are, Ailstorm.
Chant it like that?
Ah, Ailstorm. Ah, Ailstorm.
I love you, Quebecers. I love you deeply.
Then they suggested
Ailstorm.
Yeah, it's. Then they suggested Huida. And we were like, why the fuck? And then they said, oh yeah, it's the name of a ship. I was like, okay. We looked up the ship. It was a fucking slave ship.
Ooh.
It's like, do you guys have... So we said, no, we're calling it Ailstorm or not at all.
Good for you.
And they said, fine, okay.
It's a great name.
It's just pretty good. It's like beer tsunami.
It's perfect.
Lager hurricane. And then, so our first show, our first like real show as a real...
As Ailstorm.
Was, we were the opening band for a tour. It was Curaçao, Norther, and Ailstorm UK tour. First show, the nerves were horrendous. Got on stage, and I had me and my little keytar up in the front. We'd never played before. Before the first song, my strap breaks. Keytar drops the floor. Had to pick it up, reattach the keytar. Then we played, and we were terrible, but, you know, people loved it. It's been, we were terrible for a long time.
What steps did you guys take to become not terrible?
Well, again, there's that whole thing I was saying, how all this just sort of happened out of nowhere. We had a bunch of people in the band who were perhaps not best suited to playing in an international touring heavy metal band. And one, you know, could not play that well. Two, did not have the desire to be on the road for a long time, making no money, living on airport floors. And so there was a lot of stress, a lot of just bad musicianship. And eventually, you know, people leave, we replace them, and gradually got ourselves on a nice solid lineup, you know, had crew, and just surrounding yourself with the right people to make this work, you know.
It's a day-to-day family you've got to build.
Yeah.
You got to be surrounded by people that you love and you trust, and that you can go up there and do that part of the job together properly.
Yeah,
sometimes it takes time, and sometimes some of the hardest decisions is to let go a brother that you love dearly.
Yeah.
But the musical chops are just not there.
We've sometimes it's taken us a couple of years to say, oh, this guy really just should not be a part of our team. Like, what do we do? He's like, let's just stick it out. Then he's like, no, this has just got so bad, you cannot be here anymore.
It's hard. It's one of the hardest things.
No one likes it. Like, no one enjoys, you know, firing someone from your crew, kicking someone out of your band. It's tough.
You got to think of the better picture of the band.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you could travel back in time and relive any tour,
in a positive sort of way, not
of course.
If you travel back and change something, because I was like, so many things.
No. But to relive a tour that you have done, go back in time and you load into that first venue and you live it right to the end again. What tour would that be? Because of the lineup, because of the people, the parties.
I feel like at this time we were not very good at all, but Pagan Fest Europe 2009, there was us, there was Swashbuckle, the New Jersey pirate grind band, there was, I think, Korpiklaani, there was Unleashed, you know, Swedish death metal band. What a random lineup.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
And this German band called Die Apokalyptischen Reiter. And they're big in Germany. And that was just the most fun. We had the silliest time on tour. Like, it was one of these big package tours. Like, package tours are still very common in the States, but they're not quite a thing anymore. In Europe, it's often just like headliner support. So you don't get a thing where everyone's in it together, just going, yeah, whatever, we're all on tour. There's no real hierarchy. You know, yeah, sure, you play last, but you still answer to the guy who runs a tour. Mm-hmm. It was a nice, just insane party, just so much fun and stupidity and drinking and no consequences and just fun. And, like, we didn't feel like we had to play too well because, you know, again, we were, like, third on a bill of six. It didn't matter.
At what point, I know you guys are not there in that anymore, but did you feel at a time that you guys were, like, trapped in being on tours with theme bands? How did you get yourself out of that?
There's been the whole pagan metal folky dress up in a tunic and play the tin whistle scene was it didn't take a genius to notice, like, 5 or 6 years ago that whole thing was dying. Mm-hmm. The whole thing, like, there was absolutely a big boom of that, like, maybe basically, I guess that's why we got signed, because then at the time our record label thought, wow, yeah, guys who have a theme and a tin whistle and the bagpipes and any of that la-di-da heritage folky nonsense, that's the next big thing. So they just, you know, all over every festival bill, you know, all these things. But it got stale. It got real stale. Like, you know, all those Pagan Fest tours are gone now. They don't do them in the States. They don't do them in Europe anymore. Most of the bands are not
as active as they used to be. Yeah,
this band like Curious, who are they, one of these big headliners, they've not done an album since 2013. Fintroll haven't done an album since 2015. Elevati, they still keep going, but they've sort of morphed a bit towards that Melodeath sort of sound.
Absolutely, yes, I saw them a few weeks ago.
Yeah, it's, I guess they probably talk less about their pagan heritage, brothers, ancestors thing, because it was one of these weird gimmicks, you know, that worked for a while. And we just had to, you know, it's one of these things, you've got to like most of these sort of gimmick genres, a couple of people rise to the top and the rest get forgotten about. So we sort of knew we had to get out of there. We had to leave that thing. So we sort of, that's sort of why we became a bit stupid, a bit sort of just dumb party music. It's, we really tried to de-emphasize any sort of, oi, my pagan Scottish pirate ancestors element. That was, you know, one that was never really part of us. We were never serious about that sort of stuff. It was just a, you know, we had a few violins here and there. But obviously we still have violins and, you know, accordions and whistles and we've got even hurdy-gurdies on the music now, but it's...
Primary focus is party.
It's fun music as opposed to, you know, worship your ancestors music.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I honestly, back in early 2000s, thought about forming a pirate metal band. I'm not joking.
Really?
Because I wanted to have a plank that the crowd would... Have you ever? The stage diving plank.
Man, we've always wanted to have, like, a stage diving plank and just... get the hottest bikini babe in the audience to come up stage and, you know, we have these water pistols full of soap. I don't know, just, you know, just real dumb sort of spring break party shit, but pirate themed. I just feel like it just sounds like a legal liability to me. You think, oh, that could be cool, but then, like, where were we last night? We were in
Ottawa.
No, we had a day off. We were in Moncton, New Brunswick the night before. And I just heard for the show, oh, by the way, No Walls of Death. I was like, oh, okay, shit. Thanks for that. It's one of these venues, like, if you say the word Wall of Death, boop, power goes off.
Really? Okay. Is that something that you do call?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, it's, again, compared to a lot of the happy-go-lucky, twee, folky metal bands, we try and be a bit more, I think we're quite punk. And a lot of it, because a lot of the are like, contemporaries at a lot of festivals we end up playing these days. It's in Europe, mostly. And Euro metal these days is a bit sort of polished and, you know, commercially, and, you know, everything's perfect. And we're still here being a bunch of idiots, you know, fucking shit up and saying swear words because we think they're funny. And so, yeah, it's. And sometimes you get people who, like, you know, obviously we get crossover fans from those more airy fairy polished genres coming to an Ailstorm show. And they think it's going to be a bunch of people standing there going, oh, yes, that was an excellent violin solo. I agree. You know, then suddenly they're thrust into this chaos of a mosh pit and everyone's drunk and endless crowd surfers.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
Where would you like to bring the stage show coming up in the future? Endless budget. At what point is there going to be a pirate ship on stage? An 18-wheeler following you guys? I'm thinking like a Monomarth where they're at now. If you had that budget, what would you do?
Yeah, we've thought about that. We've thought about, you know, the possibility of doing some sort of pirate ship. But then we got to that whole thing, you know, I was saying earlier, that we want to step away from that, you know, Avast me hearties, this is traditional thing. So I was thinking maybe some sort of wild neon pirate ship where it's like some sort of Cubist nightmare in bright purple. But like, still, you know, like still... some zany Picasso pirate ship, like, it's all blocky and weird and cool and just robot laser knights and things and cannons
with, like,
stick
taps
out.
Everywhere
just nonsense. We've often had bar optics on the drum kit with them filled with whiskey and gin and rum.
It's amazing.
The problem is we just drink them
and then it goes against that wanting to perform.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm a wee bit thirsty. There's just this bottle of whiskey upended with a, all you have to do is get your cup and go oop, push it up into the thing, and then it's like, this is too easy to get drunk. So we started, I think they're just props now. We still do it, not on this tour, but we do it sometimes, and we have these whiskey bottles and rum bottles, like, middle, like the back of a bar, but I think it's fake now because we just can't handle the drink. But yeah, silly stage shows, we have this problem that we play in too many countries. We just we say yes to everything and everywhere we go, and we're all over the world. And we want to put on the good show everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You can't fly it everywhere.
You can't fly an 18-wheeler.
I know exactly what you mean.
So right now we're all about being very creative with scrims and a giant inflatable duck.
Really?
That is our current big gimmick, is a duck. It was actually a couple of years ago, we... 2016, we did this tour supporting Sabaton, and they have a giant tank on stage, and we were like, okay, right, they have a tank, we need to sort of look cool next to a tank.
So we, like, what can we do? We went on Amazon. We found this 8-foot-tall inflatable duck. Thought, that'll do. Stick that on top of the tank.
People loved it. People went absolutely batshit crazy. It was just the biggest thing. You know, people loved it so much. You know, like, oh, we want the duck. You know, anytime the duck would come out, the crowd would go wild. We're like, yes, this is our thing. Who needs to have a stage show when you can get this duck that folds down literally into, like, you know, a briefcase and, you know, the perfect stage prop. So I thought, what would be even better is at the end of the show, we'd throw the duck into the audience.
And people could ride it.
Oh, well, it was huge. They just sort of bounce it like it's, you know, it's taller than a human.
Oh, amazing.
And so they just throw it out. And you'd get these fantastic photographs of pro photographers, and you'd see this crowd, and just somehow there's this duck frozen in midair. Like, what is going on here? So we did that. Obviously, then the duck would get destroyed. We'd buy a new duck, yada, 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 yada. In the long run, it was in the average price of buying, you know, compared to buying an 18-wheeler and things, it was worked out pretty cheap. Great stage show. The duck supplier, it was just some inflatables company. And you can imagine they don't sell many 8-foot-tall inflatable ducks that cost. They're like $300. So it was like, it was a relatively substantial investment for a duck. And they don't sell many of those. Turns out we bought every single one.
Really?
And they'd stopped making them.
Aww.
And we were like, oh, what the shit? What do we do? So we thought it was going to be the end of the duck. But over the summer, I contacted some company in the evil empire of China and said, can you make us 9-foot-tall giant inflatable ducks? And they said, yep.
We'll buy a pallet.
Well, the thing is, these ones are great. They've got eye patches. It has the Alstom logo across the duck's chest. It looks like a real proper pirate rubber duck. I think we've done a reverse spinal tap. And instead of getting a really small Stonehenge, we've got a really bigger than we thought. They are huge. And they weigh 30 kilograms each.
Holy shit.
No longer do they fit into a little briefcase.
It's like a suitcase.
It's a chest high sort of like army sack.
Really?
It's huge. So it's.
But you can still travel with it.
Just, thankfully. Yeah. It's just under the maximum weight limit to bring on a plane. So, but it's great. That's going to be our. So that's our stage show saved. Unfortunately, we cannot throw them into the audience because.
You would crush somebody.
We would kill somebody. Yeah.
At what point, or have you already made an Alestorm beer? Not necessarily to sell at shows, but like at a bar or...
You know, that's something we've been very wary, very, very wary to get into. It's almost like a cliche these days that a band brings out, here's our wine, here's our beer, here's our cheap bottom shelf spirit. I don't want to just, you know, blow our load and, you know, hook up with the first brewery who says, we'll make you a thing. You know, I've even had like local ones in Scotland who are like 10 minutes away from where I grew up offering, but I was like, I don't know if it's going to be right. You know, is this going to be like a small run thing? You know, it's, I would be very reluctant to do that unless it was good. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like even that Iron Maiden beer, it's not good. I mean, it's obviously, I think it's like very well designed as a beer. It's because obviously it's like that English style of ale that people aren't very familiar with outside the UK, and so they go, "Wow, this is great! This is a whole style of beer I've never tried before." But it's not a very good example of that style
of the hand pumped
exactly.
Ales.
It's almost like it's been designed by committee to be the least offensive thing that will satisfy international tastes.
You're probably absolutely right.
Yeah,
about
but
that.
That's yeah. I fully believe that it's not a, you know, it doesn't challenge the palate in any way, and it's not a complex or a well made beer. It's almost like the industrial level of craft beer.
That's true, and that's weird, but
because of the branding, you see people going nuts over it.
They have two or three of them now, I think, even.
And I don't like bullshitting people. I don't like you know, presenting an image that's fake, you know, for the band or anything. You know, we don't go like I said the whole thing, we don't go say, yes, we are true pirate warriors. We're just a bunch of lads who think it's funny to say yo-ho, and that's how we present ourselves. And I'd feel very disingenuous selling a product
that you're not stand behind.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, it's just some shitty beer, I don't know.
If you were in control and you could make the beer, what style beer would it be, and what would the name be?
Well, my favorite beer
So I assume I'd probably going to replicate my favorite beer because that's the thing I could stand behind the most. It's a Belgian beer from the Castel Brewery. It's called Castel Rouge, and it's a brown ale that they flavor with cherries. So it's not like a classic Creek beer. It's heavy and dark. It's about 8 or 9% alcohol, and it's tastes a bit like syrup, but like it's cherry syrup. Beer, it's
malty.
Yeah, it's malty, and so it's not like a weird. It's not sour or anything.
Yeah, as opposed to a Creek. Yeah,
but I feel like that wouldn't market well. It's definitely not a popular thing. But you know, I would just obviously, the obvious first thing to do is just call it Alestorm. You know,
absolutely.
We actually got hit up by BrewDog. They wanted to do a thing with us, but. Then the conversation got weird, and it turns out they didn't want to make us a beer, and they just wanted us to play their AGM. I was like, no, I don't want to play a concert. I just want alcohol.
Yeah. Shout out to BrewDog. Yeah, I like BrewDog.
I the good beer again. It's a Scottish thing, isn't it?
I believe you are right. Yes.
A lot of good things coming.
I like how there's like franchises popping out throughout the UK. Exactly. So when I'm touring there, I can go drink some craft beer wherever I am.
Yeah. And they're like one of the first in the UK to really embrace that North American style of craft beers. It's
from the atmosphere to everything about the pubs.
Yeah, it's good. I like it. But yeah,
Chris, thank you so much. Taking some time.
I've had a lot of fun
sharing a beer with me.
This is very good beer. Storm. Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Funny story about this interview. Sort of a milestone interview for the Vox and Hops podcast. This was actually the first interview where I was hit up beforehand by a publicist from Napalm Records asking if I would like to interview Chris. I was super stoked and excited about that, so I absolutely obliged and made it happen. I'm super happy I did. Chris was amazing. The dudes from Alestorm were super nice, warm, and welcoming. So huge shout out to Natalie Camilo from Napalm Records for hitting me up to interview Chris. It was very, very enjoyable, and I had a great time. So cheers to the boys in Alestorm, and cheers to you, Natalie. I've started a new segment called Vox and Hops Metal Brewer Talks, where I interview metal brewers from around the globe, and we talk about their lives, their love of music, and how they got into brewing craft beer. I just recorded my first interview this past weekend with Jason Stevenson, the head brewer of Juggernaut Brewing Company from Manchester, UK. It was a great chat that will be coming out in the next few weeks. Are you a metal brewer? If you are a metal brewer, you like metal music, and you brew some craft beer, and you would like to be a guest on the Vox and Hops podcast, please send me a message via the Vox and Hops social media pages, or you can just email me at matt@voxandhops.com. That's matt@voxandhops.com. And I'd be more than happy to explain to you the process and how this would all go down. Also, I want to hear from you guys. If you guys have any questions for me that you would like me to answer on air, a Vox and Hops fan question segment, you can also send me an email, and I'd be super stoked to answer your questions during the intros. I'll mention your names, I'll read out your questions, and I'll answer them. So if you guys have any questions for me for once, let's turn the tables around. Instead of me asking other people questions, if you guys have questions for me, shoot me them via my email. I hope you guys have a great weekend. I hope you have a great week. And remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Offsets.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMNS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I'm gonna be like Chicago's.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMNS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.